You just clicked into the Get Your Money Right podcast, the podcast where not only do we want you to get your money, we want you to get your money right. This is episode number 15, what to do when you don't trust yourself with money. Should be a good one. Let's get it. What's the good news, people? Welcome to the Get Your Money Right podcast, the podcast where we talk about money like it's everybody's business, because I truly believe we're getting good with money because now we're talking about money. And this is episode number 15, where we're going to touch on a sensitive subject: what to do when we don't trust yourself with money. And I am your host, the Money Misfit, Jamar Dupas. I'll be guiding you on this little old journey. And if this is your first time tuning in, I'd like to say welcome. Thank you. Don't know how you found me, but I appreciate you being here. This podcast is a little different from all your other money podcasts. Now, we're not going to tell you to quit your job. We're not going to tell you to invest in mutual funds. We're not going to talk about the stock market. We talk and tackle money from a real life, realistic perspective. How it applies to our lives. How do we use it to live out our dreams? How do we use it to raise amazing families? How do we use it to communicate better with our spouses? And just then generally, we understand that, you know, money's not everything. But like old Zig Ziglar says, it ranks right up there with oxygen. So if that sounds like something you can get down with, welcome, and I invite you to hang out with us and continue to listen to the show. You can do so by subscribing on iTunes. We're also on Stitcher and Google Play Music. And if you want to know more details about what we do and how we do it, head over to yourmoneyright.com. That's yourmoneyright.com. There we have a membership site, and we got a course that we just put up. It's called The Roadmap to Getting Your Money Right, and it's a mini course which really includes a couple of our most popular episodes, where we go through and really lay out what it is you want to be doing, or maybe possibly be doing, with your money first, what to do after that, and just gives you a bird's eye view of what your money should be or could be doing to help you achieve your goals and get to that ever elusive financial freedom place. So that's there over at yourmoneyright.com, so you can go grab that. But today we're going to talk about a sensitive subject. And this one is sensitive because I think a lot of people, at least I know I was, they're usually in denial about their money. And one of the reasons why they're in denial about their money and they stick their heads in the sand when it comes to money is they don't trust themselves with money. And I know how it is because I've been there. For a while, actually, in my life, went through a bit of depression about it, because I felt less than, because there's been many times in my life where I had plenty of money roll through my fingers and I had nothing to show for it. And that's a pretty sick feeling. At least it was for me. I know a lot of men will resonate with a lot of men, because, you know, we're supposed to be good with money, right? That's what society tells us. That's what the gender roles and all that stuff let us know, that, you know, we're supposed to be good with money. We're supposed to be, big money makers. And if you're going to be successful, you need to have a bunch of money. And I thought that if I could just have a lot of money, that I would be successful. And I've since realized that a lot of money has nothing to do with success. You can be extremely successful and not have a lot of money, and you can have a ton of money and be the biggest failure to ever walk the earth. So we're going to get on into it. So what do you do, right? What do you do when you don't trust yourself with money? So we're going to go through five practical things to do when you don't trust yourself with money, so you can change that, so you can change that narrative, change that story, and watch yourself be a good steward of the resource that we call money. And so the first thing you can do when you don't trust yourself with money is to embrace it. What do I mean by that? Give yourself some grace when it comes to the subject of money. And there's a few reasons why. Number one, money is one of those things that we weren't taught in school, right? It's not something that comes naturally to many of us, especially those of us who grew up in less than stellar economic backgrounds, right? I don't know about you, but I wasn't around people that led great examples of what to do with money, right? So growing up, I just perpetuated those very things, those very habits that I learned at a young age around money, which is when money comes in my hand, I spend it, right? Because that's just what I always saw. That's just what I thought. So the first thing I had to do is to embrace that I am not trustworthy with money. And why is that a good thing, right? That's a good thing because it allows you to get yourself out of the way, right? It allows you to, I don't want to say not take responsibility, but stop relying solely on your willpower. This was a big breakthrough for me, just in life in general, in my spiritual life, in my financial life, in my relationship life. One of the things, those of you know that, and I talk about this a lot, that I am a Christian, and one of the things I struggled with early on in my walk was trying to be perfect, right? And there was actually a time in my life where I told God that, look, if I got to be like your people, if I got to be perfect, I'm just not going to be able to do it. So I quit. I give up. I'm not going to be able to do it. And it was almost like, it was almost like God just said to me, it's about time, right? It's about time you realize you can't do this on your own. It's about time you realize that you are a flawed being. And that's okay. That's why I made the ultimate sacrifice for you. And when I came to that revelation, my life completely changed in all aspects of my life, because now it allowed me to not feel guilty, not to condemn myself, not to hold myself down. And what I was doing was sabotaging my own success because I was so hard on myself. So by doing that, by understanding that I am flawed, that I will make mistakes, I look for other ways. I look towards God. I look towards other ways. I look towards other systems who allow me to create the behaviors I want to create. For example, I used to be in the bar business. And when I was in a bar business in that nightlife, I was around a lot of women, right? And I like women. I'm a man, right? I'm a flesh bearing man, right? But at the time, I had met my wife and I wanted to get married. The problem with that was being in that nightlife, being around all those women, it wasn't conducive for marriage, right? It wasn't the right environment for marriage. So instead of trying to trust myself and continue to be in that nightlife and continue to try to depend on my willpower to resist the temptation, I decided I got to get out of this nightlife. I got to find another way to get this done, because if what I want most is to marry this woman and to be faithful to this woman and to be a great husband, I need to do the things I need to do to make sure I don't mess that up. And because I didn't trust my own flesh, I knew I had to stay out of those environments. And that's the same thing with our money, right? So if you don't trust yourself with money, let me first say congratulations. Congratulations. But I want you to embrace that. Embrace that about yourself. Understand that about yourself, because so many people go through life not understanding that, and they continue to fall victim to the ego, right? They continue to try to muscle their way out of their situations and think their way out of situations. But you got to understand, your very best thinking has gotten you to the place that you're in right now. And if you're not happy with where you are right now, you need to stop listening to yourself. I heard a mentor say this one time, and when he realized, he said that his mentor told him he needs to stop taking advice from broke people. And when he heard that, he said to himself, you know what, self, you're broke. So stop taking advice from broke people. The good book talks about not leaning onto your own understanding, and that's wisdom. That's why. So if you don't trust yourself, embrace it. You're on a good path. So number two thing you can do when you don't trust yourself with your money is get clear about what it is you truly want. Because this is the reason why we fall off, right? This is the reason why people try to save money and they can never seem to save money. Maybe you saved up an extra $500 or an extra $1,000 or even $10,000 or whatever the case it may be. The problem with saving money is savings alone doesn't work. Why? Because you're not clear about it. That dollar, that money, that savings, it doesn't have a clear mission. It doesn't have a clear purpose. So when anything pops up, you raid the savings account, right? Because it's just sitting there. It has no assignment. So it just looks available. Whether it's a conscious thing or a subconscious thing, if you're not clear about what it is you really want your money to do, it will just do whatever. It'll just fall to the whims of, like we talked about before, your inability to trust yourself, right? Because you got to understand, every day we are being bombarded with marketing messages, right? There's somebody telling you that you need more of this or you need more of that. And especially like ladies, you know, this is not a knock, but I'm married to a lady and I'm married to one who loves Target, right? And if she goes into Target and she has money, okay, and that money has no assignment, Target is going to get that money. Why? Because everything in there is so dang cute, right? Everything in there appeals to her sensibilities. Everything in there is attractive to her, right? So if she has a pocket full of money and that money has no assignment, Target is going to get that money. Now, true enough, we'll have some cute stuff on the wall. We'll have a new stool. We'll have a new painting. We'll have, you know, whatever it is that she sees. So it won't be for nothing, but it may not be the best use of the money. It may not be exactly what she wanted that money to do. So if you find yourself spending money and then regretting it, getting that buyer's remorse, the problem is you don't have a bigger purpose for that money. So when you have money, get clear about what it is you want that money to do for you so that it just doesn't fall to the wayside of your emotions in that those weak moments when you're out and about doing your shopping or surfing on Pinterest or going through Amazon or what have you, right? So number three is about honesty, right? It's about being honest with yourself and set up a realistic spending plan, right? And this follows right along with getting clear about what you want. But when you set up, what I mean by a realistic spending plan is you know the things that you like, right? You know the things that are valuable to you. You know the things that you're not gonna stop buying, right? At least for now. Be realistic about that. If you're going to spend so much money on makeup, or you're going to spend so much money on getting your car customized, if you're going to spend your money on your supplements, if you're going to spend your money on your arts and crafts, whatever it is that you do, you need to make a plan for that. You need to include that in your spending plan. So many people, they try to budget, right? And what they do is when they try to budget, they try to shrink everything down to the bare necessities, right? Well, I'm not going to have cable anymore, or I'm not going to go out to eat anymore, or I'm not going to go to the gym anymore, or I'm not going to get my hair done anymore. Whatever, I'm not going to get haircuts. I'm going to cut my own hair at the house, whatever it is, right? They come up with these crazy ideas. And initially it sounds good, right? But your behavior, your spending habits won't allow that. You're going to get your haircut again. If getting your haircut is important to you, you need to put that inside of your spending plan. And one of the things that has helped me is I don't even think about spending as spending anymore, right? Every time a dollar leaves my hand, I think of it as an investment. If it's not adding to my life, I don't spend my money. So therefore, every time a dollar leaves my hand, I consider it an investment. Even if it's something as simple as a piece of gum, somehow, some way, it's adding to my life, right? It's the other way we do that is we have money set aside just so we can just blow it. We can just do whatever we want with it, right? Because if you don't celebrate, if you don't do fun things with your money, you're going to self-sabotage and end up spending all your money anyway. That inner child in you won't let you be this Scrooge for too long. Now, some people can be, right? But if you're married, one of you may be a Scrooge, the other one is not, right? That's typically how it happens. 11 times out of 10, that's typically how it happens in a marriage. You usually marry your opposite. But sometimes both of you are spenders. Like me and my wife, we're both spenders, right? I'm probably less of a spender or more of a saver than she is. But for the most part, we both like to spend money. And really, I don't know anybody who don't like to spend money. But the problem with spending money is when you're spending money and it's not adding value to your life, right? It's not contributing. We like to call this having a finely curated life, right? Using our dollars to finally curate the things we want. If you come to our house, and we always get these compliments. My wife always gets compliments on how well decorated the house is. But there's not much in the house, right? Not every wall has a painting on it, right? Not every floor has a rug or whatnot. But because of the things that we do have has been so finely curated, has been so, what am I trying to say? We've purchased things on purpose. Like if we don't love it, we don't buy it, right? So those few things that we do have, we may spend a bunch of money for it, but it gives us the biggest impact, if that makes sense. And that's what we try to do with our money, is with our spending plan, we're realistic that we like nice things, right? And yes, we do save, right? Yes, we do prepare for our future. Yes, we do put money to the side. And yes, we do take care of our expenses and stuff like that. But we also know that we like nice things. So we're realistic about that, and we put those things in a place. And what happens with most people is they try to cut out those things that they know that they're going to end up buying anyway. Now, some of the things you need to stop buying. If it's not adding value to your life, you need to sit down and take a real hard look at it, you know. And I'm not going to talk about what those things are, but you got to look in a mirror and look at your priorities, and you can make that determination for yourself. But that's number three. Be honest with yourself and set up a realistic spending or investing plan when your money goes out, right? So number four is key, right? And number four is basically spend your money before you spend your money, right? What do I mean by that? Just in line with number two, getting clear about your money, and number three, setting up a realistic plan, is you need to be able to spend your money before you go out in the wild. How do you do that? You grab a sheet of paper. You take what you have, what you've brought into the house, right? So if you and the wife, or you and the husband, or you by yourself, you brought in $2,500 on this paycheck, or $2,000, or whatever it is, you sit down with that $2,000 and you break it up. You need to ask yourself, what does this money need to do before I get paid again? Right. And you line it up with the things that you want to happen in your financial life. You line it up with that realistic spending goals that you had. Right. The realistic spending plan, and you spend your money on paper first. So if you know you got to pay the mortgage or the rent this month and it happens before you get paid again, and it's $500 or $1,000 or $1,500, whatever it is, you need to write down mortgage $1,500. Right. You go through your list of priorities. Right. And you spend on paper first. If you know you need to keep your spending at Target to $100 this week, well, you need to write that down. Target $100, or personal money $100, or spending $100, or club money $100, or hanging out with the fellas. I like beer, right? I know that sounds crazy. I like good beer. So if, you know, in my spending money, that's where that's coming from. But I know that I put it on paper first. I don't just walk into the grocery store or to a tavern or whatnot, not knowing what I have to spend, right? Because that would be trouble, right? That's what going into Target and not having money in your pocket and not having that assignment. Basically, Target will just get everything that's in your pocket. And that's where we fall. So number four is spend your money before you spend your money. Get out a sheet of paper or use a software. We like to use YNAB. It stands for You Need a Budget. We like to use that. It has changed our lives, especially when it comes to how we spend our money and the clarity we have around that. So look that up, and I'll put that in the show notes as well. I'll shoot you a link to that. But I can't stress enough how important this very step is, that you make sure you spend your money before you spend your money. Give every dollar an assignment, right? Give it a marching order. So there, that way, there is no surprises. There is no guesswork. And if you're married, see, this is what's going to do wonders for you, right? If you're married and you're sitting down and you're doing this together, which you should be doing this together, there's no guilt behind the spending, right? Me and my wife, we sit down and we talk about this stuff, and she wants to go to Target, and we've already determined that this is her money. She can go to Target and she can spend every single penny of that money. And there's no guilt. She doesn't have to sneak that money back into the house. I won't be mad about it. But before we really communicated with the money, every time I saw her come in the house with a bag, my heart started beating. Like, oh, Jesus, I hope she ain't spent all our money, right? Or I hope she know that we got bills to pay. There was always this anxiety and this angst about money because we weren't clear about it. And anytime you have that stress in a relationship about it, this is why money is one of the biggest reasons why divorces happen, right? This is why relationships break up, because there's always that tension of not knowing. That's that inability to really foresee what's coming, and the things that catch you off guard. And fellas, and ladies, fellas, us fellas, we don't like that, right? We stress about money a little bit differently than you all do. Everybody, I think, stresses a little bit about money, but especially when there's this unknown, right? And especially when there's a history that one of us or both of us hadn't been very good about money, right? Just to be very candid with you, that was me and my wife. You know, we came in with serious debt, with serious spending problems. I'm talking about like $20,000 in debt on like one credit card. That's not the full deal, but just one credit card. We had $20,000 in debt on one that we brought into the marriage. So there was always this undertone of distrust when it came around money, and I was real bad with it. Anytime I saw a bag in her hand, I got nervous, right? And because we really weren't very good with our money, you were just kind of hoping that there would be enough for the bills when the bills came due. And so if you can get down with this, husband and wife, sit down and spend your money on paper first, agree as to how you guys are going to allocate this money, you'll find that your communication as a husband and wife will go to a whole nother level. Just around money, not just around money, but what you'll find is you'll get these habits around every aspect of your life, and money won't become a taboo subject. Money won't become a place of stress. In fact, money is probably one of our favorite things to talk about now. Every time we sit down to talk about money, we grab a beverage of choice, whether it's tea or coffee or wine or beer or whatnot, and we sit down and we allocate our money and we talk about our future. That's some of the best moments that me and my wife have together, and that's because we started this habit of sitting down and making that determination of what our dollars are going to do for us, when they're going to do it for us, and how they're going to do it for us before we actually go out into the wild and let our emotions take over and squander all our money. Right. And so let's go. Number five. This is the fifth and final step, and really important if you understand psychology, if you understand the psychology of human behavior. And everything I talk about is based on psychology, by the way. If you haven't caught that, even the first four steps, it's all based on psychology and the emotion of what it is to be just a real life individual. Right. But number five is set up an accountability system. Right. There needs to be a situation where there are some checks and balances, where there are some consequences for not consequences, but basically, like I said the first time, checks and balances to make sure that the plan that you set forth gets followed through, right? And I give you an example. One of the reasons why it's really important for people to get a personal trainer, for example, is because there's an accountability system there. Success rates with people who have a personal trainer versus people who try to do things on their own are just exponentially greater, right? Why is that? Because the accountability, right? If you have a personal trainer, right, you're probably paying them for that service, right? So one, that's one aspect of it. You're spending your money. You want to get your money's worth. That's one aspect of it. The other aspect of it is you don't want to waste that other person's time, right? So you're going to probably try to be on time. You're going to have an extra reason to get up off your butt and go. And then another reason is once you get there, right, you don't necessarily have to think about what you need to do. They have a plan already in place for you. So throughout the week or your in-between days, you don't have to think about what you need to do once you get to the gym. Your personal trainer is the one that's going to be putting all that together. And some of them will even put together your meal plan and all types of things. So it even takes more stress off your shoulders. And that's the power and the psychology behind those first few steps we talk about money. If you think about it, if you sit down just on paydays with your spouse and you just kind of talk about your money, you won't really have to think about money anymore, right? And that's what we find. We don't even think about money throughout the week. Now, we sit down and we do our spending plan and our assignment of our dollars pretty much once a month. Now, we'll come together in the middle of the month. We'll check, see how we're doing, if there's any changes we need to make. And that's another thing. As a side note, you guys, when you're trying to budget and stuff like that, quit trying to stick to budgets, right? You need to learn to roll with the punches and ebb and flow, because that's how life is. Stop trying to be so strict, trying to be so hard on yourself. That's not how things work. But anyway, what was I saying? I'm off on a tangent. I think we're talking about personal trainers. So like, that's why personal trainers work, right? That's why the success ratio with somebody who has a personal trainer or a coach, that's why it works. That's why some of the greatest athletes and the greatest business people and the greatest couples and the greatest, you know, people of whatever industry you can think of, that's why they're usually at the top, because they have a coach, they have an accountability system, they have a personal trainer, they have whatever it is. You know, you think about Tiger Woods' greatest golfer in the world, at least he was at one point, he had a coach. Michael Jordan always had a coach. He had a shooting coach. He had a dribbling coach. He had a coach. He had a personal coach. He had a life coach. You know, all these people have people that help them go to the next level because of accountability, right? And when you don't have the accountability, you just do whatever and there's no consequences, or at least the consequences don't seem to show up until later on in life, right? It's just like, it's almost like saying, if I ate junk food every day for like 30 days and I didn't die after 30 days, it's like I'm saying, okay, well, I ate this junk food, I didn't die, so junk food must be good for you. Well, no, I just didn't see it. I'm not able to see down the road what this is really doing for me, right? So a lot of people go through lives and their finances like, look, I haven't really messed up. I hadn't really filed bankruptcy, and retirement is so far away, I'm not really worried about it. So I don't really need this accountability. I don't really need this extra, because apparently I'm doing fine. Well, the truth is you're not. You're creating terrible habits. And just because life has been going great for you, that doesn't mean it's always going to be smooth sailing, because life happens, right? So set up an accountability system. How do you do that? Well, the first person, if you're married, is your spouse. You can use your spouse as an accountability partner, right? Y'all make it a game. Make it something fun that you do together. But it starts with sitting down and talking about your money in general, right? Talking about what you all want to do. Talk about what you want your money to do. Talk about realistic spending plans, what you want your life to look like. Talking about spending your money before you spend your money. The four things we've already been through. But that's the first part. If you don't have a spouse, or if you and your spouse don't think that can work, you can get a bookkeeper, right? They're actually not as expensive as you think. A bookkeeper, what they will do is every month they'll look over your expenses, and it used to be you had to write down everything, but now they can have access to your you know, your activity through your bank account and stuff like that. And they have systems set up to where they don't actually know your logins and your passwords, but that your spending can be ported into their software, and they can look over your spending and let you know how you're doing, what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong. And that's almost like a personal trainer. It's almost like a coach. You can do that. You can find another couple that you can hang out with, and you guys can be accountable to each other. That's probably was one thing I've been thinking about, is creating a network for people. I'm going to call it the accountability couples, where you can find another couple that's on their financial journey, maybe around the same area or same point in life that you are, where you guys can kind of grow together and talk to each other about, you know, your challenges with money and stuff like that. And that's one of my big dreams, you know, for the website and for the membership site and for the podcast and stuff like that. But you want to set up accountability system so that you have some checks and balances. One of the things that me and my wife use, we talked about it before, we use that YNAB, which has not only does it has a software we're allowed to, you know, lay out our spending plan, but it also has an app on our phone. So when we go out, I can look on my phone and says, okay, daddy, you got $60 left to spend. So if I got $60 left to spend and the thing that I want to buy is $70, I got a decision to make, right? Do I want to go ahead and spend that $70 and move that, and, you know, come up with that $10 from somewhere else? Or do I just not really need that thing that I thought that I was going to get for $70, right? And when we first started, our accountability was ourselves, and we used the cash envelope system. And we first heard this when we were listening to Dave Ramsey. And Dave Ramsey was an important part of our early financial lives when we were trying to get everything together. It's something that we would listen to every day. It would help and inspire us to not just to get out of debt or anything like that, but just to be good with our money. Right. So that's what we first learned about the idea of cash envelopes. And if you're unfamiliar with cash envelopes, basically, if you sit down and do the first few things we talked about, right, and you decide, okay, I'm going to spend $500 on groceries this month, what you would do is you would get an envelope, you go to the bank, you pull out $500, and you would put that $500 in that envelope. And on that envelope, you'd write groceries, right? And when you go to the grocery store, you don't take anything else but that grocery envelope. Right. So if you go to the grocery store and you got $500 and you spend $502, well, something's got to go back on the shelf. Right. Because you came in with only $500. There's another option, right? Either something has to go back on the shelf, you need to reevaluate it, what it is that you're spending on, or if you have another envelope, say for instance, you have an envelope that's labeled kids, right? And there's $200 in that envelope. You can say, well, I can take $2 out of the kids envelope and move it over to the groceries envelope in order to pay for this groceries. And the reason why this works is it keeps your goals at the top of mind, right? And that's the real reason why we mess up. That's the real reason why we have overdraft fees, right? That's the real reason why our money doesn't do what we thought we wanted it to do, is because we forget. Things aren't on the top of our mind. But when you're out there with these envelopes and you got all you got in these envelopes, it reminds you every single time, well, this is what you decided to do already on paper. And therein lies the accountability. And we did that when we were first starting off because we were such bad spenders, and it made an amazing difference for us, right? Now, we don't do that now because we've gathered great habits, and we use that software and stuff like that. But we did that for the first few years, and it made a huge difference. Now, it was difficult. It was hard, right? I'm not going to lie about it. It was tough. And it wasn't convenient. We had to go to the bank. Well, first we had to sit down and talk about our money. Then we had to go to the bank, withdraw the money. And a lot of times you have to get like smaller denominations, because at the time my personal money was maybe like $10 or $20 or just $30. It was really small amounts. But we would put our categories in these envelopes, and we would just use cash. Now, we would pay for other things that, you know, our regular, you know, monthly expenses, we would use checks, or not checks. We never use checks. We would use our checking account, our bill pay, or we would just pay that as it goes, you know, our light bill, our rent at the time, things like that, we wouldn't use cash for those things. But the things like groceries, grooming ourselves, our little blow money that we had, going out to eat money, all the children's money, all that stuff would be in cash envelopes. And we didn't always take all the cash with us, but it helped us keep our plan in order. And anytime we needed more money than what was in the envelope, we had to be very purposeful about the decision, right? So if I use up all grocery money and all I got is the kids' money, well, I got to say, do I want to take this away from the kids? I had to literally pull the cash out of the kids' hands, right? In a sense, right? And say, I'm taking this money from my kids' budget and I'm using it for groceries. Or I'm taking this money from my kids and I'm using it for myself, right? You see how that works? It really holds you accountable and forces you to make top of mind cognitive decisions when it comes to your money. And that's the power of it. That's the power of accountability. And when you get to that point where you're making these money decisions, all the guilty spending goes out the door. The overdraft fees, that doesn't happen anymore. You may find yourself still kind of bickering back and forth, especially when it comes to deciding about money. There's going to be an adjustment period, right? When you first start doing this, it's not going to work out, right? Your first 3 to 6 months, everything is going to be jacked up. You got to give yourself some grace. Remember we talked about number one, giving yourself some grace, embracing your imperfections, right? It's okay. Just keep trying. Nobody's good at anything when they're first starting, right? So give yourself some grace and get that done. So let's recap. First thing you could do when you don't trust yourself with money, right? Embrace it. Give yourself some grace. Number two, get clear about what you want. This is why savings don't work. You need to be real specific about what you want. You got to give your money a greater purpose than just to sit there, right? Number three, be honest, be realistic. Set up a plan that you know that you can at least kind of semi-follow that'll at least allow you to continue to add to your life and live. Now, there are things you need to do. You're going to need to save, right? Now, you've heard me say that savings don't work, right? Look, nobody gets rich by saving, right? But nobody who's rich got there without saving, okay? So it's an important part of it, no doubt about it. Number four, spend your money before you spend your money, right? And I got this from a gentleman when he was talking about the best time to spend your day is, or the best time to start your day is after you've already finished it, right? So this helps me. So the day before, you know, let's say I got Monday coming up, day before Monday, I'm talking about, or I'm writing down what it is I want to accomplish. I'm going through my mind. I'm putting it down on paper, what it is I want to accomplish on Monday. So I've finished my Monday before I started my Monday, if that makes sense. So I've taken that and I use that when it comes to money. I spend my money before I spend my money. And that way, there are no surprises. There may be some surprises, but I've made better money decisions in a better state of mind than I would have made if I've tried to make these money decisions while I'm already out at in Best Buy, where electronics is my weakness, right? So while I'm sitting down at home in the right state of mind, I can make those financial decisions. And then number five, set up an accountability system. We talked about why accountability systems work. Your accountability partner could be your spouse. You can get a bookkeeper. You can do cash envelopes. It can be software. If you're really struggling, if you really don't trust yourself, my recommendation is to do the cash envelopes. In fact, everybody should do cash envelopes at least for a year of their lives, right? I really believe you should do that and go down that route and see what it's like. One, so later on in life, you can teach somebody else how to do it and you can know what it's like. But two, it puts you in a good habit. It puts you back into a place where you understand the value of a dollar. One of the issues we've had, especially being millennials and coming up in this digital age, is we don't really feel what it is to spend money, right? And credit card companies know this. They know that we spend 18% more money when we do it on a debit card or a credit card than we do it cash, right? And there's a reason behind it. There's a psychological reason behind that. So what I'm trying to do is combat that so we don't have to continue to keep giving up that 18%. And while we're doing that, it's almost as saying is we're saving 18% on everything that we spend. I think I may even do a show on that because that sounds like a pretty good headline. But anyway, that's all I got. Hope that was helpful. If you learned anything, let me know. Remember, I'll have all the links and everything I talked about in the show notes over at yourmoneyright.com. And if you can think of anybody, just one person that you can think of that could benefit from this information we share today, share this show with them. Let them know what we're doing. Let them know about our cause, right? Because I really truly believe that we're getting better with money because we're now talking about money. And I'm so glad and I'm so happy that you all are with me on this journey. And I just know that if we continue to do what we're doing, we're going to change a lot of lives. We're going to change a lot of family trees. So again, thank you so much for listening. I really do love you dearly. And God bless. And P.S.